This CosmicReality.com presentation is sponsored by MysticalWares.com. Is there something wrong?
Warning. Life support failure on all decks. Abandon ship.
Maybe it is time to take command.
Bridge to Captain.
Join Jan Shaw, updating current events as only Jan can.
Library computer. Data being received.
Produced by CosmicReality.com.
Hello and welcome to this Saturday's edition of the Cosmic Creating Show. My name is Jan Shaw. I'm known as the Success Alchemist. You can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net, thewebalchemist.net, empoweredmanifestation.com, on Facebook and YouTube, Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist, and on Twitter at Coach Jan Shaw, and also now on Telegram, US UK Patriot. So today is the 14th of May, 2022, and today's show is going to focus on Biden handing over US sovereignty, 2,000 mules, and devolution part 21, and January 6th insurrection narrative crumbles. And if I have time, there's a few other things that I could squeeze in if possible, but we've had some interesting things happen this week. The House passed a bill to send another $40 billion to Ukraine, but thankfully Rand Paul stepped in and said, no, hang on, we need to make sure we've got oversight to this. And it's been ridiculous that McCarthy, Susan Lewis and other GOP rhinos visited Ukraine, and just like all the others, they're just strolling through a lovely square and no sign of any war zone whatsoever. So they really must think we're stupid to fall for this ridiculous story. And of course, the other thing is the shortage of baby formula, and the response of the Biden administration is, well, we're not mind readers. How could we know there was going to be a shortage? At the same time, sending pallets of baby formula to the southern border for the illegal immigrants. So, as usual, it's America last. So let's start the show off by looking at Biden handing over US sovereignty. And I put this first because this is quite urgent. It's actually happening in the next week or so. This is from Just the News. Michelle Bachmann warns Biden maneuvering to cede US health prerogatives to World Health Organization. Former presidential candidate and Tea Party star says administration move would diminish American sovereignty if allowed to go through. And incidentally, it's also affecting every single nation that is part of or is bowing to the WHO, the World Health Organization. So it's also affecting the UK. Actually, I actually signed a petition yesterday against signing on to this treaty with the WHO. Anyway, we'll go into detail on this. Former presidential candidate and Tea Party star Michelle Bachmann is warning that the Biden administration is stealthily maneuvering to cede US healthcare sovereignty to the United Nations World Health Organization and create a platform for global governance. The Biden administration will propose amendments to the International Health Regulations Treaty via the World Health Assembly when the WHO's International Policy Setting Forum convenes May 22nd to 28. Bachmann told Just the News, Not Noise, on Thursday the Biden proposal would effectively cede United States sovereign authority over our healthcare decisions to the World Health Organization Director General, a position currently held by Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. And let's face it, we know what a disaster all the WHO declarations were relating to COVID-19. So this is not a good thing at all. Tedros made almost every possible wrong call that he could make during the pandemic, said Bachman, Dean of the Robertson School of Government at Regent University and a former Republican member of Congress from Minnesota. Tedros publicly praised China for its early response to COVID. The WHO Director General has been accused of being bought by China, and in May 2020, then-President Donald Trump wrote a letter to Tedros, sharply rebuking his organization's alarming lack of independence from China. The Department of Health and Human Services will only hear public comment on the amendments Friday, May 13th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., Bachman explained. But it is currently accepting written comments on the issue via email. Incidentally, this article was posted on May the 12th. Bachman said she has requested to be able to speak before this committee, and I submitted written objections to these amendments. Bachman told show co-hosts John Solomon and Amanda Head that the United States should not only pull out of the World Health Assembly and WHO, but also leave the United Nations. As bad as Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Rochelle Walensky were with their authoritarian decisions at the CDC and NIH, now their authority will be given to the World Health Organization, Bachman warned. I'm urging your entire audience to send an avalanche of no way, no how, we don't want these Biden amendments over our health care, Bachman said. We have to shame the Biden administration into not giving away Americans' authority over health care to the WHO and not creating a platform for global governance through the WHO. This level of authoritarian decision-making that we've lived with for almost 3 years would now be given over to the director of the WHO, the former lawmaker said. So we would lose, effectively, representative democracy in America over one of the biggest issues there is, healthcare. That will be ceded to the director general of the WHO, Tedros. That's why this is so important. Bachman said she has contacted attorneys in an attempt to stop the United States from yielding national authority to the Global Health Organization. There hasn't been sufficient transparency, Bachman said. We cannot cede US sovereignty over healthcare to the UN. We can't do this. We have to stop it. Concerned citizens should contact their members of Congress, Bachman said. So anyone aware of the Great Reset plans and Agenda 2030 and so on would realise that this is a step in the direction of one world government, which is absolutely unacceptable. So on to devolution part 21, and this is related to 2,000 mules. Of course, I covered a lot of that on the last show on Wednesday. Watching 2,000 mules was enlightening. Oh, incidentally, this is Patel Patriot's devolution series at patelpatriot.substack.com. Many of us knew the 2020 election was stolen, but the scope of the actual operation, as detailed by the movie, was rather breathtaking. I believe we can look at 2,000 mules to prove once again that devolution has been implemented. Let's remember what I said in An Introduction to Devolution. The devolution series is based on the idea that Donald Trump implemented some form of continuity of government plan in the face of a different kind of emergency, a stolen election. Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution requires the President to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. As Commander-in-Chief of our armed forces, the President is charged with the responsibility of protecting and defending the United States. The first fact you need to understand is that Donald John Trump would have been derelict in his duty as President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief of the military to allow the election to be stolen and Joe Biden installed as President. Mail-in fraud. Trump designated COVID-19 as an act of war, and then he told us that the enemy would use it to steal the 2020 election. From the BBC, they're using COVID to defraud the American people, Mr. Trump told delegates on the first day of the party convention in North Carolina. From The Hill, President Trump on Monday further cast doubt on the US election process, claiming falsely that the only way he would lose in November is if the election is rigged. Trump made the remark at the end of a speech to supporters in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, on Monday afternoon as he implored them to vote. It follows months of Trump claiming without evidence that widespread mail-in voting during the coronavirus pandemic would invite fraud into the election. Donald Trump knew the election was going to be stolen. He told us they were using COVID to implement mass mail-in voting. The scheme laid out in 2000 Mules is how they have stolen elections for years. They knew in 2020 they would need far more votes than ever before. They still fell short, maybe because they believed their own fake polls. The movie goes over an organized criminal operation using mules to hit multiple drop boxes over a period of time. What is mind-blowing is that they were still far short of what they needed to steal the election. That's why they had to literally stop counting on election night. They needed to bring in even more ballots and pull whatever they had under the tables and scan ballots multiple times. The shenanigans that took place the night of the election was in addition to the ballot trafficking scheme we saw in 2000 Mules. Yes, the magnitude was that massive. They used ballot trafficking and mass dumps of ballots the night of, but it was even more than that. Don't forget the circumstantial evidence of cyber interference and vote switching in the voting machines that took place, which I have discussed extensively in this series already. Remember the tweet I showed in Devolution Part 1? More reports of voting machines switching Romney votes to Obama. Pay close attention to the machines. Don't let your vote be stolen. And that was a tweet from Donald Trump, November 6, 2012. Trump knew and he was right about everything. We are called crazy for knowing the reality of our elections, but it's really easy to pull off when you have the right people in the right positions in all the major cities running our elections, and then the media willing and complicit to cover it up completely. The focus of this article is going to be mostly on ballot trafficking. Just like he knew in 2012 that the machines were compromised, Trump knew they were going to use ballot harvesting. 2016 voter fraud. Trump caused a media frenzy during his first presidential run when he stated that he should have won the popular vote in 2016. A simple search around the time period of 2016 will show numerous headlines on the topic. Almost all of them are debunking his unproven claims. And there's a whole list. I'll just read a couple of them. Fox News, Trump's vote fraud claims explained. There's always some voter fraud, especially with more than 134 million ballots cast. But there isn't even evidence of the localized vote rigging in the upper Midwest claimed by Trump's detractors. Fact-checking Trump's claims about serious voter fraud. This is from ABC News. ABC News has fact-checked Trump's claims and found them to be false. Trump claims millions voted illegally, costing him the popular vote. Trump calls the election recount effort sad. Trump claims, in addition to winning the Electoral College in a landslide, I won the popular vote if you deduct the millions of people who voted illegally. And so it goes on. Snopes has a pretty good summary of what Trump said. Pressed to provide evidence for his repeated claim that 3 to 5 million people voted illegally in the 2016 presidential election, which he won, President Trump announced on 25th of January 2017 that he is asking for a major investigation into voter fraud. And it's got a couple of tweets from him. The president provided no details as to who will conduct the probe or when. Trump first made the claim that there was massive voter fraud in late November, when the popular vote count showed Hillary Clinton besting him by almost 3 million, even though the Electoral College had delivered him the presidency. And he tweeted, in addition to winning the Electoral College in a landslide, I won the popular vote if you deduct the millions of people who voted illegally. PolitiFact was kind enough to cite 7 further examples of Trump claiming voter fraud surrounding the 2016 election alone. In recent years, Trump has repeatedly claimed the existence of massive voter fraud and election rigging, which we've debunked again and again and again and again and again and again and again. In his most recent comments, we found no support for the notion that you get thousands and thousands of people sitting in somebody's living room signing ballots all over the place. Leading up to the 2020 election, with COVID-19 in full swing, Trump began specifically calling out ballot harvesting. From PolitiFact, as many states take steps to encourage voting by mail amid the pandemic, President Donald Trump has frequently falsely linked voting by mail to fraud and criticised the practice of ballot harvesting. Get rid of ballot harvesting. It is rampant with fraud. The USA must have voter ID. The only way to get an honest count, he tweeted April 14th. Newsweek, what is ballot harvesting? Trump claims voting method is rampant with fraud. One specific case of Trump calling out ballot harvesting and calling for an investigation came after Project Veritas released footage implicating Democratic Representative Ilhan Omar. From the New York Post, Trump calls for investigation into Representative Omar over ballot harvesting claims. It was September 28, 2020. President Trump has called for an investigation into Democratic Representative Ilhan Omar for alleged ballot harvesting in Minnesota. This is totally illegal. Hope that the U.S. attorney in Minnesota has this and other of her many misdeeds under serious review. If not, why not? The president tweeted early Monday. We will win Minnesota because of her and law enforcement. Saved Minneapolis and Iron O'Range, he continued. The president was referring to a report from Project Veritas that implicates Progressive Squad member Omar in an alleged cash for ballot scheme to gather absentee ballots illegally from Somali immigrants. In a video posted by Project Veritas late Sunday, Liban Mohammed, the brother of Minneapolis City Council member Jamal Osman, is shown with ballots filling his car's dashboard. Just today we got 300 for Jamal Osman, Mohammed says in the video posted on July 1st, according to the report. I have 300 ballots in my car right now. Numbers don't lie. You can see my car is full. All these here are absentee ballots. Look, all these are for Jamal Osman. Ballot harvesting is illegal in most states, and Minnesota law allows a third party to collect no more than 3 ballots. Omar Jamal, a Minneapolis community leader, implicated the Democratic congresswoman, saying Mohammed is one of her many people. It's an open secret. She will do anything that she can do to get elected, and she has hundreds of people on the streets doing that, Jamal told Project Veritas in an interview last week. Mohammed accused Project Veritas of doctoring the video to take his comments out of context. Representative Omar posted a tweet shortly after midnight that linked to Trump's calling for an investigation. It included a video of a game show contestant unveiling a card showing $750, a reference to a New York Times report that said the president paid that amount in federal income tax in 2016. Trump has warned that allowing millions of Americans to vote by mail this November would result in rampant fraud and taint the election results. So let me reiterate once more the main point here. Trump knew leading up to the 2020 election that they were going to steal it. Everybody knew they were going to steal it. He also knew exactly how they were going to steal it. As I've laid out in the Devolution series, Trump has always been making moves to counter the enemy, oftentimes well beforehand. Let's look at what he did, showing us he was well aware of the ballot harvesting scheme. Election integrity. On May the 11th, 2017, Donald Trump issued Executive Order 13799, Establishment of Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. By the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, and in order to promote fair and honest federal elections, it is hereby ordered as follows. Section 1, Establishment, the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity Commission is hereby established. Section 3, Mission. The Commission shall, consistent with applicable law, study the registration and voting processes used in federal elections. The Commission shall be solely advisory and shall submit a report to the President that identifies the following. A. Those laws, rules, policies, activities, strategies and practices that enhance the American people's confidence in the integrity of the voting processes used in federal elections. B. Those laws, rules, policies, activities, strategies and practices that undermine the American people's confidence in the integrity of the voting processes used in federal elections. And C. Those vulnerabilities in voting systems and practices used for federal elections that could lead to improper voter registrations and improper voting, including fraudulent voter registrations and fraudulent voting. So the entire point of the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity was to study the same types of schemes outlined in 2000 Mules. The executive order goes on to provide some definitions. Section 4, definitions, and I'm just going to read the highlighted parts. For purposes of this order, the term improper voting means casting a ballot in multiple jurisdictions. The term fraudulent voter registration means knowingly and intentionally taking steps to add ineligible individuals to voter lists. The term fraudulent voting means multiple ballots with knowledge that casting the ballot or ballots is illegal. The commission Trump established in May of 2017 tells us he already knew how they were stealing elections. Unfortunately, although not surprisingly, the commission was met with backlash from the media and Democrats. Eventually, Trump ended up disbanding the commission. President Trump has shut down his Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity, also called the Vote Fraud Commission. Some Democrats and their allies in the Liberal Election Administration community are cheering as if they have won a war. In a sense, they did nuke the field of bipartisanship that existed in the election administration field. No voter should be happy about this. And from US News, many mostly Democrat states refused to hand over data from the 2016 election to the Commission on Voter Fraud, Trump wrote on Twitter Thursday morning. They fought hard that the commission not see their records or methods because they know that many people are voting illegally. System is rigged. Must go to voter ID. As Americans, Trump continued on Twitter, you need identification, sometimes in a very strong and accurate form, for almost everything you do, except when it comes to the most important thing, voting for the people that run your country. Push hard for voter identification. What's interesting is what Trump actually did when he disbanded the commission. Instead of completely ending the study, he handed it off to the Department of Homeland Security. Statement by the press secretary on the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. Despite substantial evidence of voter fraud, many states have refused to provide the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity with basic information relevant to its inquiry. Rather than engage in endless legal battles at taxpayer expense, today President Donald J. Trump signed an executive order to dissolve the commission, and he has asked the Department of Homeland Security to review its initial findings and determine next courses of action. I wasn't able to find anything yet regarding what happened once this was transferred to DHS and if any significant moves were made. The DHS would later establish election security with CISA, the group I discuss in Devolution Part 5. Regardless of what the DHS did with the review, the fact Trump started this commission, that the commission's scope was spot on with the scheme portrayed in 2000 Mules, and that the media and the left fought so hard against it should tell you everything you need to know. Trump had them caught. So again, if we assume Trump knew exactly how they operate and also what they were doing by pushing mass mail-in voting due to COVID-19, it's silly to think he didn't do anything about it. Surveillance. Another aspect that stuck out to me from the 2000 Mules documentary was when they tied many of the mules to Antifa and the protests during the 2020 so-called Summer of Love. True the Vote was able to purchase geodata and piece this all together. Imagine the capabilities of our military. I've already shown you that our military was monitoring and surveilling Antifa starting in June of 2020. Here is a recap from Devolution Part 6. May 25th, George Floyd dies. May 31st, urgent email sent granting DEA authority to conduct covert surveillance and prevent against threats to public safety. May 31st, PDJT tweets that the USA will be designating Antifa as a terrorist organization, even though that didn't happen yet. June 1st, Trump urges governors to deploy National Guard and threatens he would mobilize every available federal force, both civilian and military, to end violent protests. June 1st, Trump makes a surprise visit to St. John's Church, and it's got the image of him holding up the Bible. June 1st, hours after St. John's picture, FBI spy plane started surveilling Washington, D.C. protests. Shortly before 11 p.m. on Monday, June 1st, just hours after federal police used tear gas and batons to clear protesters from the front of the White House for President Donald Trump's Bible-wielding photo op, a Cessna Citation jet took off from Manassas Regional Airport in Virginia. Until about 1:30 a.m., it flew in a 7-mile circle around central Washington, D.C., surveilling the protests, flight tracking records show. The aircraft is a one-of-a-kind spy plane operated by the FBI, fitted with sophisticated cameras for long-range persistent video surveillance day or night. It repeated its late-night circling around the city as protests continued the following two nights and made a shorter flight on June 6th. June 3rd and 4th, National Guard uses RC-26 to surveil DC protests. The FBI Cessna jet wasn't the only sophisticated government spy plane to fly over DC in early June. On June 3rd and 4th, an RC-26 surveillance aircraft operated by the Air National Guard flew in tighter circles at altitudes of less than 7,000 feet. These planes, like the FBI's jet, are commonly used in counter-drug trafficking operations. The Air National Guard told Air Force magazine that these flights were responding to a District of Columbia National Guard request to provide airborne situational awareness of key lines of communication and critical infrastructure within the district. June 4th, AG Barr announces DOJ has evidence of Antifa involvement. We have evidence that Antifa and other similar extremist groups, as well as actors of a variety of different political persuasions, have been involved in instigating and participating in the violent activity. And we are also seeing foreign actors playing all sides to exacerbate the violence. The Department of Justice is working to restore order in the District of Columbia and around the nation. June 19th, reporting confirms the DHS used helicopters, airplanes, and drones in more than 15 cities to watch protests over the killing of George Floyd and obtain more than 270 hours of surveillance. So if True the Vote was able to connect Antifa to the mules, don't you think the military, already surveilling Antifa protesters, would be able to make that connection too? Executive Order 13848. There were two individuals stroke entities stemming from 2,000 mules that stuck out to me because of the ties they have to foreign money, specifically George Soros, which would implicate them in EO 13848, imposing certain sanctions in the event of foreign interference in a United States election. Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams is a Democratic Party politician and activist. She is best known for losing the 2018 Georgia gubernatorial election as the Democratic Party candidate. Since her loss, she has alleged election improprieties, many think without clear evidence. She sits on the board of the Center for American Progress, a prominent left-of-center think tank with ties to the Democratic Party establishment. According to Charlie Kirk, the mules used Stacey Abrams' headquarters as the stopping point for their ballot pickups. Stacey has multiple ties to Soros through her campaign and various entities she has either founded or sits on the board of. Example 1, Center for American Progress. It's a liberal Washington, D.C. based think tank with strong ties to the Democratic Party establishment created in 2003 as the left of center alternative to the right-leaning Heritage Foundation. CAP was founded by John Podesta. Notable financial supporters of CAP include the Sandler Foundation, the JPB Foundation, the Open Society Foundations, and Foundation to Promote Open Society associated with George Soros. Example 2, George Soros drops $1 million into Stacey Abrams' campaign for Georgia governor. Example 3, Abrams raised $12.5 million for two nonprofits between 2013 and 2016, Voter Access Institute, currently Fair Fight Action, and Third Sector Development, a nonprofit she founded in 1998, the journal Constitution reported. Separately, Abrams said that billionaire liberal financier George Soros and his son Alexander gave a total of $1.25 million to her PAC, Georgia Next, from 2014 through 2018, but Abrams would not say how much either gave to her nonprofits. Voter Registration Project. The Voter Registration Project is a voter mobilization group which targets African American, Latino, Native American, low income, and other voter groups likely to lean left of center. The organization claims to be nonpartisan but is run by individuals with long-standing connections to left-of-center nonprofits, including the AFL-CIO Labor Union Federation, George Soros' Open Society Foundations, and the State Voices Network of liberal state-level advocacy groups. These are just two individual stroke entities that specifically stemmed from the 2000 Mules documentary. How many other NGOs and individuals played roles in this massive and organised ballot trafficking scheme? How many can be tied to foreign donations? This is the definition of foreign interference directly from Executive Order 13848. The term foreign interference with respect to an election includes any covert, fraudulent, deceptive, or unlawful actions or attempted actions of a foreign government or of any person acting as an agent of or on behalf of a foreign government, undertaken with the purpose or effect of influencing, undermining confidence in, or altering the result or reported result of the election, or undermining public confidence in election processes or institutions. On behalf of a foreign government is obviously the key phrase. Would using Soros's money to fund the ballot harvesting operation fit this definition? Would using a massive ballot trafficking scheme in general to steal a presidency for Joe Biden, a man with numerous known connections and likely more unknown to China and the CCP, be considered interfering on behalf of a foreign government? The Bidens received some $31 million from Chinese businessmen linked to the highest levels of Chinese intelligence. I'd say it fits the definition, but it's not up to me. Flight 1745, Richard the Saint's latest article, and he's titled it The Final Descent of Flight 1745, when it's actually titled The Arrival of Flight 1745. Anyway, he goes on, is a brilliant compilation of work showing almost certainly that there is a coordinated operation happening behind the scenes. I highly encourage you to either read or listen to the article, and he's got a couple of links there. I actually went through the whole article, and it's very interesting. I'm going to show a few screenshots that really stood out to me and add a few things that I believe are relevant. Unlike the cyber symposium that was high on promises and low on PCAPs, 2,000 mules exceeded even the expectations of those of us that are up to speed on these matters. But I noticed a few interview comments from True the Vote's Catherine Engelbrecht and Greg Phillips. They made a couple of comments in passing that really blew my mind. In response to the question of how were you able to process all this data, they said, "Oh, we were able to borrow a supercomputer in Starkville, Mississippi." First of all, one doesn't just borrow a supercomputer like it's a spare laptop or something. There are security clearances a mile long required to even gain access. Secondly, under no circumstances would you actually tell people where that supercomputer is located. That was either a major slip-up or a targeted communication. At any rate, since we now know its location, what do you say we dig a little deeper? There are approximately 500 supercomputers worldwide, and one of them exists in Starkville, Mississippi. And there's an image from Mississippi State University. MSU's new supercomputer ranks fourth fastest in US academia, continues tradition of calculating real-world research solutions. And there's also an extract from an article, research.noaa.gov. Mississippi State University to host supercomputer to power NOAA research. And of course, NOAA is National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. In mid-July, Mississippi State University will begin operating a NOAA-funded, newly installed high-performance computer called Orion to support NOAA research and development in environmental, weather and climate modelling and autonomous vehicle design and operation. Now hang on a second. They were doing their analysis utilising a supercomputer funded by NOAA, which is part of the US Department of Commerce. They were using government hardware. Wait another second, exactly when did they gain access to this supercomputer? I would really be curious to know that answer, because nobody on this planet is going to convince me they gained access to do this type of video surveillance and geofencing analysis on the 2020 election during a Biden administration. Whatever they were doing on the supercomputer started during the Trump administration, which of course begs the question, what was happening on this Department of Commerce supercomputer, which went live in June of 2019? Perhaps more than you will ever know. Space news. US Space Command eager to hand over space traffic duties to Commerce Department. That was November 17, 2019. The White House in June 2018 issued Space Policy Directive 3, that assigns the Department of Commerce the responsibility for the publicly releasable portion of the DoD catalogue and for providing basic space traffic management data and services, either directly or through a partnership with industry or academia. Space traffic management? Space domain awareness? Really? Are there space traffic jam issues? At this point, I think it's becoming clear that the only space object tracking that is taking place is related to space ballots. What is very interesting is they are doing all this through partnership with industry, COF, Oracle, and academia, COF, Mississippi State University. As a side note, remember that supercomputer at Mississippi State University that the True the Vote folks borrowed? I was poking around the site and noticed they have the entire suite of Oracle-based systems installed, but I'm sure that's just coincidence. The significance of Oracle to the devolution story is becoming much more prominent, and Richard the Saint has been the driving force behind bringing that picture into focus. It appears as though True the Vote was able to borrow the supercomputer from Mississippi State University, and that supercomputer is directly tied to Oracle. Allow me to add to what Richard the Saint put together. The supercomputer at Mississippi State University is a Dell EMC system, and it's got a headline, MSU NOAA Celebrate Orion Supercomputer. Mississippi State University and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration leaders cut a ribbon, it's got the image here, Wednesday, December 18th for the Orion supercomputer, a Dell EMC system, that is the fourth most powerful computer system in US academia. Pictured from left is MSU Interim Vice President for Research and Economic Development, Julie Jordan, Dell EMC Senior Vice President / Senior Fellow Jimmy Pike, MSU President Mark E. Keenum, NOAA Assistant Administrator for Oceanic and Atmospheric Research, Craig McLean, MSU Provost and Executive Vice President David Shaw, and MSU Director of High Performance Computing, Trey Breckenridge. Dell and Oracle have had long-standing partnerships over the years. From 2003, Dell and Oracle expand partnership. From 2013, Dell Oracle in new partnership to fill product service gaps. Dell and Oracle even had a partnership with EMC specifically when it was its own company. Dell EMC and Oracle simplify enterprise data warehouse deployment. Dell's strong relationship with industry leaders like EMC and Oracle is paramount in our focus of simplifying IT and delivering innovative solutions to meet the needs of our customers, said Rick Becker, Vice President of Solutions, Dell Product Group. In 2015, Dell purchased EMC and Larry Ellison considered it a brilliant move. Larry Ellison thinks Michael Dell is brilliant for buying EMC and will make billions personally. Then there is this white paper from November of 2021 titled Dell EMC PowerStore, Oracle Database Best Practices. It cannot be a coincidence that the supercomputer used by True the Vote is this well connected to Oracle, a company coming more into focus as a player in Trump's ongoing plan. Remember some of what we already know of Oracle and a member of the devolution team. Of all the role players in the slaying of the global order, none is more interesting, covert, and significant as Ezra Cohen Watnick. When H.R. McMaster fired Watnick, it was the most surprising thing in the world, given the fact that McMaster had it out for him pretty much from day one. What was surprising to me was to see him immediately land a job at the DC office of Oracle. And again, we're not talking about a guy looking for a transition job until he could get on his feet again. We're talking about advising the CEO, Safra Catz, on national security issues and deployed Oracle's high-security cloud computing technology to allied governments. This was a purposeful hire by Trump friend Larry Ellison, Oracle CTO. So now, as a now private citizen, Ezra is tightly coupled and one of the architects of the government cloud cyber infrastructure at Oracle, working for Larry Ellison, who, as we all know, is very friendly with Donald Trump, chairman of the PIDB, Public Interest Declassification Board. Directly and forever connected, via the Obama wiretapping scandal, to former congressman and now CEO of Truth Social, Devin Nunes. Then there is this regarding the Twitter situation we see unfolding. Elon Musk gets $7 billion in fresh financing for Twitter deal. A Saudi prince, Larry Ellison, and a Bitcoin exchange are among 19 investors joining in on the Tesla CEO's bid for Twitter. But of course, the news of the last few days was the revelation that in order to fortify the Twitter deal, Elon gathered a cool $7 billion from a host of other sources, but the most noteworthy investment was from Larry Ellison himself, who put $1 billion on the table. But are any of us under the impression that Musk actually needed the money? Of course not. This was simply Larry Ellison and Oracle making a public statement that we are all in on the preservation of a core American principle, free speech. Speculation alert. What this all leads me to believe is that the voting scheme outlined in 2000 Mules was investigated by True the Vote with the assistance of Oracle as part of the ongoing devolution operation. Whether they had all of this stuff discovered ahead of time is a question for somebody with more technical expertise. I'm confident if our military was watching for this activity, they would have the technical capabilities to capture the operation as well. This would be in addition to what they found in the cyber realm. Remember, the election was stolen using various methods. 1. Ballot trafficking, as presented by 2000 Mules. Number 2, vote switching through compromised machines. 3, major vote dumping and duplicating of ballots. When they realised the machines and ballot trafficking wouldn't be enough, they literally stopped counting on election night to mass dump ballots and have workers such as Ruby Freeman scan the same ballots multiple times. 4, cover up by the media and our local and federal government, most notably the rhinos at the local level. After 2,000 mules, I would say numbers 1, 3 and 4 are extremely obvious, with more and more coming out daily. The one we are waiting for, and possibly most important to the devolution theory, is number 2, and that was vote switching. Expect more bombshells to come out regarding all of these. Now, do we know Trump and his team were monitoring the shenanigans the night of the election? Election night. Another topic touched on by Richard the Saint was the fact that the election was monitored from a skiff. Do you remember how pissed off people like Democratic Congressman Bill Pascrell was about the following? Pascrell demands probe of Trump use of White House for campaign war room. I write urgently demanding an explanation of whether Donald Trump and members of the executive branch are breaking the law on election day. Reports suggest that Donald Trump is using space inside the Eisenhower Executive Office Building as a campaign war room. Additionally, Mr. Trump is expected to be briefed in the White House residence and the Oval Office throughout the day by campaign officials. These actions put executive branch officials at risk of blatant violations of the law, including the Hatch Act, Pascrell wrote. Pascrell asked the special counsel to investigate, among other things, who installed Trump campaign Wi-Fi at the White House, and why a planned election night party in the executive mansion wouldn't violate the Hatch Act. I actually looked up the Hatch Act, and the president and the vice president are both exempt from that, so he's got no chance there. Do you know why they were pissed? Because the Eisenhower building has a SCIF, Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility. For those not familiar with a SCIF, it's where high-level political figures can go to watch and or actively participate in major events. Killing of bin Laden, military combat initiations, etc. with the highest level of security available in the world. I would first like to add proof that there is a SCIF inside the Eisenhower building. In 2014, Singleton Electric Company completed a project which modernized the Eisenhower Executive Office Building. Eisenhower Executive Office Building Modernization, February 2014. The third paragraph here is really all you need to read. In the third and final phase of the project, CECO continued with tenant improvements, as well as designing and installing a custom underfloor distribution system for tenant office space, power and telecom. The majority of this work was installed in SCIF areas. Now, why is this significant? A SCIF can be any room or building outfitted to prevent intrusion or surveillance efforts. They are used by government and military officials when discussing confidential information, often related to national security. Perhaps the most notable example of a SCIF is the White House Situation Room. If Trump and his team were indeed watching the election unfold from a SCIF at the Eisenhower building, it means whatever they were doing had an aspect likely related to national security. Let's do the math here. Trump knew they were going to steal the election. Trump knew how they were going to steal the election. Trump knew who was going to be involved with stealing the election. The election was monitored from a SCIF. Knowing all the above, how could Trump not have done something about it? 2 + 2 = 4. The only logical conclusion is Trump did do something about it, and we're seeing it unfold now. True, the vote using a supercomputer related to Oracle is no coincidence. 2,000 mules is part of the rollout. Closing. I'd like to end this article using Trump's own words rather than my own. On November 27, 2020, just 10 days before he issued Executive Order 13961, which implemented and executed a continuity of government plan, President Trump held a Thanksgiving teleconference with members of the military. he concluded by taking questions from reporters. And then it's got a long section of Trump's remarks during that teleconference. And it's primarily him answering questions about the election and stating his belief that the election was stolen, of course. I don't have time to go over all of that. But before I go on to my last topic of the day, I just want to go into something that came up as a result of the 2000 Mules movie. And this is from Gateway Pundit. Huge. Arizona election fraud investigation is a direct response to 2000 Mules investigation and whistleblower interview. Dinesh D'Souza's 2000 Mules documentary exposed massive evidence of illegal ballot trafficking during the 2020 presidential election in key swing states nationwide, and law enforcement is now investigating these crimes in Arizona. According to Dinesh, 2000 Mules is the most successful political documentary in a decade with over $10 million in revenue. The Gateway Pundit reported that the movie will be coming back to theaters due to high demand. The film features an interview that True the Vote's Greg Phillips conducted with a whistleblower in Yuma County who took part in this illegal ballot trafficking ring. The whistleblower said she was working as a receptionist and told Phillips, "I was just instructed to go ahead and receive ballots from various people, females mostly, and on Friday they would come and pick up payment. I assumed that was payments for what they were doing. And then I would get a call to find out how many ballots and if they were already pre-filled out first. And then she would come in to the office, look at them, and then before she left, she would either take them herself, but other times she would ask me if I could drop them off at the library." Phillips, "So what was the instruction?" Whistleblower, "Just to drop them off in the drop box, the early ballots." Phillips, "Was there a reason she wanted you to go to that drop box as opposed to maybe City Hall?" Whistleblower, "There are no cameras there and she would want me to take it in the evening when it was dark also." Phillips, "Do you personally think that the elections in San Luis are free and fair?" Whistleblower, "No, they're fixed. They've been fixed. They already know seriously who is going to win the next election before it even happens." Phillips, "How do you think this affects the community, especially the Hispanic community? Because it seems like they're preying on minorities." Whistleblower, "They're an easy target because most of the Hispanics that live in the town are not well educated as far as the law. They look at it mostly as, oh, she's trying to help us because we're older, because she's having someone come and pick it up at my house because I don't drive. Most of them, maybe I would say, honestly, 90% of the elderly that live in San Luis don't drive or have relatives that are willing to drive them to do this, to go to the voting polls. Back when I first moved into the city of San Luis, I did have somebody come and knock on my door and ask for my ballot. And it was somebody I knew that I had known for many years since I was a child and up to this date. That person does not talk to me because they said there was no way I was giving them my ballot. I call it the Mexican Mafia, seriously, because they work like that. I offered to help a long time ago, but again, they told me, no, no, don't, because you're going to end up in the trash can in pieces." Phillips, "What do you think it's going to take to get this trafficking to stop?" Whistleblower, "For people to get caught and to pay the price." Greg Phillips previously said, "We learned video was specifically turned off on particular drop boxes in Arizona." Yesterday, True the Vote reported, "Today, the Yuma County, Arizona Sheriff's Office announced in a press release that they, along with the Yuma County Recorder's Office, are actively examining cases of election fraud from the 2020 general election, as well as a recent pattern of fraudulent voter registrations in the lead-up to the 2020 primary election." In the press release, the YCSO indicated that as of March 2022, their office had 16 open voting and registration investigations and outlined four types of election fraud they have identified in Yuma County: impersonation fraud, false registrations, duplicate voting, and fraudulent use of absentee ballots. Dinesh posted the Yuma County Sheriff's press release on Truth Social, calling this a direct response. This fraud investigation is in direct response to the research findings of True the Vote. The mule depicted in my documentary is from Yuma County, Arizona. Hashtag 2000 mules. So, in conclusion on that subject, it does seem very much like the White Hats have things under control, and that this gradual tackling of the voter fraud and overturning of the fraudulent 2020 election is in progress. So, as I always say, we must stay positive about this and trust the plan, because, as I've said many, many times, it is a huge undertaking to take this whole corrupt establishment down. So I want to finish with this story. Nancy Pelosi's January 6th insurrection narrative set to crumble with major update from licensed investigator. And this is from Red Voice Media, and it was published on the 13th. I can tell you that these prisoners are not lying. I can say that because it's pretty much all somewhere on video. Washington, D.C., according to a release from StopHate.com, Stop Hate founder David Summerall is reportedly slated to release 14,000 hours of unseen footage from January 6th, following his recent licensing through the Department of Justice as a video forensic investigator for the Joseph McBride law firm. Well, that's good news to start with. We've been clamoring for this. Summerall has apparently been working relentlessly on reviewing footage from the incident at the Capitol in order to provide the clearest picture possible of what genuinely transpired last in January of 2021. During an interview on May 10, Summerall described some of the footage that he's seen thus far as absolutely shocking, claiming that portions of the footage portrayed the most violent police action towards citizens that he has ever seen. Summerall stated that there were unsettling aspects about how some of the officers on January 6th communicated with their colleagues at the time of the incident, saying, "To hear the communications between the police and to hear their conversations, hear what they say about the way they beat these peaceful protesters, the amount of force they used, the incorrect use of force, the laughing and carrying on, it's disgusting. Currently serving as an expert witness in 11 cases pertaining to January 6th, Summerall hopes that his work and testimony will behoove hundreds of others caught up in January 6th prosecutions, many whom Summerall believes are being warrantlessly or maliciously prosecuted. I expect that hopefully by others finding out that I'm a licensed investigator for one of the attorneys, it will put the other attorneys on notice to say, why didn't y'all hire an investigator to try to get your people free?" Since January 7th, Summerall has been reviewing footage that was publicly available, remarking on how much he and others were able to ascertain and accomplish by merely using what was floating around online. "It's amazing when you have the public video that we've had for over a year and seeing what we built with that. Yet now the picture will become all the more clear with Summerall having access to the footage that affords an inside look into the other half of the equation, the perspective of the police who were present at the Capitol on January 6th. But then to have the police cam footage, like the body cams and the CCTV, it just gives you another perspective. A lot of people have seen the Victoria White beating in the tunnel, where she's hit 34 plus times in the head in under 3 minutes with a baton because she was trapped against the wall. So to see that times a thousand is overwhelming." Summerall is actively putting together videos of relevant footage for the 11 cases he's involved in, hoping to secure some wins in court. "I'm building a long video because I think that needs to be shown to kind of set the stage at these trials. Let's get an idea of what these people were up against before you start calling them hardened criminals. Let's see what the police were doing to them before they came in here and try to tell you they were defending themselves from the police." While Summerall is working to prove that the defendants in the cases he's involved with were faced against officers operating way out of line, he also notes that not all of the police who responded to the Capitol incident were bad actors. There were good guys, bad guys. There were good teams and bad teams. I think a lot will come out, you know. And of course, I'm not at liberty to say everything, but I can tell you that these prisoners are not lying. I can say that because it's pretty much all somewhere on video. And we've been checking against a lot of this testimony to corroborate it. Summerall says that sometime in the near future, the unseen video footage will be released, saying, "What Nancy Pelosi does not want people to see." Yeah, that's exactly the video footage I want people to see. And I don't have time to cover this story, but also Gateway Pundit reports, Joe Rogan on January 6th Capitol protest, how about the effing FBI agents who were inciting violence? They had people that were there for a fact. We know that. So he's also calling out the way that this was a setup with the FBI being involved and the Capitol Police inviting people into the Capitol. So that's all I have time for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the show. The story is unfolding, as I said. Just keep the faith, as I do. And just a reminder, you can find me at the successalchemist.net, thewebalchemist.net, and empoweredmanifestation.com. And I hope you'll join me for another show on Wednesday. I'm hoping I'll be able to do it. I'm still waiting for my moving date. Thank you to Nancy for producing, and also to Derek Condit from mysticalwares.com for being the sponsor of not only this show, but of the Cosmic Reality Radio. Stay safe, be well, and bye for now.
You have been listening to Cosmic Creating with Jan Shaw, updating current reality. A production of CosmicReality.com.
Thank you for listening to Cosmic Reality Radio. We appreciate your support. Please visit our sponsor at MysticalWares.com for our huge selection of metaphysical products, gifts, candles, incense, and one of the largest shungite collections available.
Cosmic Reality Radio is sponsored by Mystical Wares online store, where coupon code SAVE10 will get you 10% off your entire order at MysticalWares.com.